I want to invite everyone now watching this video with Ben Seganti and me to really open your heart and relax into your depth and be open to what our conversation might bring to us of moments of being touched, of insights, of inspiration, of wonder, of questions. And I want to really also invite you to be present with your evolutionary impulse inside of you, which has a sometimes gentle, sometimes really powerful pull or push towards your next stage of development. And I can't imagine someone more exciting to speak with, Benze, because you are an integral psychologist. You are the founder of the European Integral Conference. And I was able to experience already a beautiful flow between us in our last year's conversation. And I see you as someone who is really on the edge of finding out and guiding individuals and groups in this really crucial process we are now in, where we as individuals and as society, as a global collective, transition to another state of being where we don't have lots experience of. We face a lot the not knowing, the unknown, but we can kind of create an inner attitude where we connect with our heart and with our, I would say, our innocent curiosity, our spirit of adventurous beings. And so today I want to dive with you into this, let's say, into this facet where I would like to hear from you a bit about what it means to come to the next stage of our development in terms of leadership, in terms of how we lead in the special time we are now in.
Yes. Thank you, Uriah, for the invitation and for the introduction. It's always a pleasure to be on your program. And it's our second time, as you say. And yes, many of us are thinking today in the world that we are in an evolutionary shift and we are going somewhere from here to a next stage. And so if we think of that, what is the next stage or what are the next stages? And there are different approaches to that. There is an instinctive approach that we don't know exactly. We just think or feel that there is a next stage. And there are some more precise approaches, typically models that have some kind of developmental scheme, which describes, you know, where we are, where we came from, and what's next. And there are many kind of schemes of that, developmental models of that, both in professional psychology, Western scientifically based psychology, I mean, both in the spiritual traditions, the major traditions like Buddhism, Yoga, Christian mysticism, Sufism, you know, shamanic traditions, and both in the esoteric world, like Rudolf Steiner, etc., where there is one esoteric person who somehow says channels other dimensions and describes sometimes very interesting, sometimes a little bit odd, you know, versions and models. And so if you look around, you know, what are valid sources of information about where we go, we need to take these systems into account. And you either choose your favorite system, one system that you somehow like, and you know, for example, astrology, and then you say that we are going to Aquarius from Pisces, or, you know, you can throw any other system, we go from here to there. Or just generally say that we are going to a more conscious, aware era, or we need to awaken. Or we can draw more precise models like developmental psychology has, which actually has a more detailed description of what a matured, evolved adult can be, as opposed to what a typical normal adult is in society. No, and that's one of the sources that we in integral psychology use. And I'm going to speak about that soon. I just want to name the sources first. The other source that we use is the spiritual traditions. The spiritual traditions doesn't necessarily talk about the next era coming, though Christianity has, you know, Christ will come back, or Buddhism has Buddha will come back. Before that, we will deteriorate a little bit. You know, the Hindu yogic tradition talks about the Kali Yuga, the Dark Age that's coming. But still, these are pretty, pretty vague, pretty, you know, big categories. And nobody knows if we are talking about the next few years or the next 100 years or the next 3,000 years. So, but what we have from the spiritual traditions is the stages of inner development. In other words, if we start to meditate and purify ourselves, what are the stages of the gradual opening up of spiritual awakening and enlightenment? And if we compare the different traditions, there is a stunning similarity between them. And these similarities are summarized by Ken Wilber, the founder of integral theory, in the four major stages of spiritual evolution. So basically his work that I basically agree with and represent for more than 20 years because of its preciseness and inclusiveness of all the major development models. So we basically have through Wilber the four major spiritual stages that we all will go through. So from that perspective, we are going towards a spiritual era, a spiritual transformation. Now, in the 90s, between the 60s and the 90s, I call it the initial new age or the initial postmodern era, where this was all new and we didn't know the detailed differences, just a general, you know, category that we're going to be spiritual and we projected all the good stuff. We are going to fly, you know, we are going to communicate telepathically in 20 years. Love, you know, and peace will abound and anger and, you know, evil will go away and it will be so fine in a couple of decades. That was kind of the happiness and good news of the 70s, 80s, 90s. And during those decades, many people really tried, you know, to get enlightened, to wake up, to purify their soul. They went to therapy, they went to India, they went to meditation. And the new era hasn't arrived as quick and as glorious as we had thought at that time. And also enlightenment and human betterment wasn't as quick and easy as initially we might have thought. So out of that postmodern wave that was the reaction from modernity, you know, materialistic thinking and no soul, no spirit dried out. Postmodernism was the reaction with the new age. And out of that born a more mature, more precise, more skilled and informed approach, the integral approach that said, okay, guys, let's slow down. Let's look into more details. Let's bring together the pieces, you know, and let's have all that experiences from the postmodern era that people had. And now we have a more precise understanding about the stages of spiritual development that's universal all through all the traditions. And also we understand that we cannot simply push everyone into spirituality so quickly, you know, and between the ordinary modern life and spiritual awakening, there are stages that come from psychology, not from spirituality. The human potential movement brought in those stages. So now I think where we are and what is the next stage of evolution is not yet getting fully enlightenment. We are not going to have 7 billion you know, siddhas and saints walking around in 10 years. those are the peak of the developmental scheme. So we're going to have a few of them, hopefully, or a dozen of them, or hundreds maybe. But for the masses, the requirement is not to jump up to the top of the developmental ladder, but to get one major transformation somewhere in the middle of it. And that's what in integral we would say level 6 out of 10 levels, or in other distinctions, we also give colors to these stages. So we call green and teal stages. And we have a more precise description for those. And probably you are curious of those because you are also asking about leadership. So once we understand the developmental stages, then we understand more what is the new leadership way and what needs to be replaced. So you want me to show the chart again, or you want me to go verbal? Because I have that.
I guess there is no need, but maybe you can describe a bit your understanding where in the modern world you would say most of us are, and maybe describe it a bit.
Yeah. Okay. So in the modern world, basically, there are approximately three stages involved, even in the modern world. The modern, the epicenter of the modern world is the rational self, the modern independent psyche, the scientific, data-driven, mechanical, technological, competitive, entrepreneurial business world, which is a marketplace. So in the modern world, humans see all the world as a marketplace. You know, there is no God, no spirituality. It's all childish nonsense or new age purple haze. You know, but basically the normal adult, you know, is over of these childish things and is rational, drives his and her own life, you know, rationally. And the purpose of life is live a good life as much as you can, earn as much money as you can, you know, go travel, have nice possessions, have status, and do some good for society, you know. But there is no afterlife, no deeper meaning, no universal ethics, so it's all a playground of winners and losers. So that would be the modern, you know, system. And democracy is the way to organize ourselves, which means basically as a human relationship, that instead of the traditional era where there was one self-authorized man, you know, like Putin in Russia is the more the traditional, that I'm gaining power and I'm suppressing, you know, others. There's no more real democracy, and I try to maintain my control as long as I can, preferably a few decades long. That was the Middle Ages, was with the kings, and now in democracy it can also happen when you know, leaders with authoritarian, you know, tendencies gain power and they start to manipulate the system. Unfortunately, the Hungarian prime minister is also of that kind, as you know, Orban. Is a little bit not stepping forward in evolution, but a little bit back in the traditional values. So, but it's still kind of within the modernity, and below the modernity, which is also part of the European discourse now, and also in America, is the traditional self. In modernity, we define ourselves as individual equal beings, right? That's why we don't allow someone to get bigger than us and control us for 20 years. Or self-definition and societal, you know, game is the game of equal people, equal chances. And even anyone can run for president. We elect the president, you know, it's not imposed on us, we elect it. We elect it only for 4 years, right? And then we elect someone else. So basically the leader is elected by the people, sent there by the people to arrange the issues of the common issues of the nations. While as in pre-modern traditionalism, the pre-modern era, it's the other way around. Somebody's put there, right? And either by bloodline or by some kind of political, you know, move, and that person is imposing an authoritarian power, maybe forever, like in the Middle Ages, the king, and then the son of the king was the next king. And there was kind of the bloodline. And your self-definition, I am the small one, and the eternal small, and there is the eternal big. And that's, we also call it the absolutistic order world. And basically all the religions belong here too. There is the absolute big one, God, the very big ones, the Pope, and the big one, the priest, and I am the smaller believer, you know, who follow the big ones. So whether it's come out as religion or whether it comes out as a societal system, feudalism, monarchies, or whether it comes out as bureaucracy in the modern world, in the secular world, the heavily bureaucratic system are the same structure. This is a developmental stage of human psyche and of relationships and society below that stage. And then after modernity comes postmodernity. So when the materialistic independent selves had enough of all that goodness and they start to become lonely, they start to get alienated from each other, you know, and they figure that something missing, a deeper meaning is missing, love is missing, you know, a rational adult and a scientist, you know, is refraining from showing emotions and love in a conference, you know. I remember when I went to scientific conferences when I was a student, I was, guys, why can't you just relax, you know, and sit in a circle and be more enjoyable? Why is it serious? So there is the need in people to, you know, to loosen up, to become colorful, to connect, to sit in circles instead of sitting in rows. Just think of this, sitting in circle, everybody sees everyone. There is more equal human connection as opposed to sitting towards a stage. You know, one is the upfront speaker and the others don't look at each other. Just rearranging the room, you can shift the stage of consciousness, at least from modern to postmodern. Now, postmodernity brought with itself social sensitivity, equal rights to people who were in the modern or pre-modern world, you know, looked down, like equal rights to gays, equal rights to any sexual orientation is fine, and, you know, traditionalists go crazy, but the Bible says, you know, and then postmodern people, no, this is exactly love translated to the world, that we love the different people, we don't have to guard off, etc. So postmodernity brought the social sensitivity, brought a wider spectrum of love and compassion and care, and also a wider spectrum of perspective taking. You can take the perspective of almost anyone, which was in a stage before opposing views. In the postmodern stage, maybe it looks opposing, but you start to understand the interior truth of that view as well. That's how you start to understand, even be interested in very different views and start to feel that they are also included in your interest, in your compassion and care. And this is called pluralism. So pluralism, more compassion and care, you know, social sensitivity, and a deep and honest desire to renew the world so that it is all inclusive and everybody is accepted and loved. You know, that's the postmodern turn and the postmodern way. Now, if you look at the refugee crisis, you can clearly see how these three stages of evolution are at play. Just look at Hungary, Germany, Sweden, how they do they react to the refugee and migrant influx. And some go like the early German reaction, open arms, come here, you know, free as much as you want, and warm welcome. That's the postmodern attitude. you know, the modern attitude starts to think about business. They are useful for, you know, for the economy. We should create quotas. You know, let's count how much who has. Let's do business deals and then quota deals. Let's be fair with mathematics, you know. Maybe bigger countries gets more, smaller countries gets less. So it's a mature, modern approach. And the business thinking behind that it might be actually good for the economy, et cetera, that's the modern thinking, you know, seeing the world as a marketplace. And the traditionalist people say, now, wait a minute, let's build walls, you know, because we don't want strangers here. That's what Orban said just a few months ago in one of the gatherings, you know, political gatherings, that we have been a Christian nation for 1,000 years. We want to preserve this tradition. We don't want other, you know, cultures here. And it's so embarrassing. You know, if I would hear it in Burma, where I go to meditate, and it's very traditional and old school, but very good for meditation because they preserve it precisely due to the traditionalism. But there you hear these kind of things, you know, and it's okay. But here in the European context, it's a step back from modernity to pre-modern era. I can't believe it's the 21st century. That's what I have to go through. Why already in the 90s, you know, I was building in Hungary the postmodern world of the pluralism and compassion and love. So basically, Europe is now in a turmoil of, Ken Wilber calls it culture wars, that these three, you know, major approaches or stages of evolution at play are now wrestling with each other, basically. And if we go down one more step back, because it's also on the scene from pre-modernity, before the traditionalism, authoritarianism, there is the tribalism. It's even one previous stage of evolution, you know, when there was not even feudalism and kingdoms, but tribes. And basically tribes were ruled and run by, you know, power figures with emotional, relational power and manipulation capacities. In modern societies, these are the warlords, the mafia leaders, or the psychopaths. You know, they don't follow rules and order like traditionalists, but they just follow the wolf pack, the rules of the wolf pack. They are the alpha wolf, and thus they control others by personal, you know, force. And those people, the extreme right, who wants to not only get keep strangers away, but actually want to go there and beat them, you know, those are that earlier stage of evolution. They feel that their personal responsibility is to physically go there and kick out, you know, everybody who is not us. So we see that in Trump as well. So in Trump, we see a mixture of a modern, you know, businessman, you know, and a pre-modern, like tribal, almost like a psychopath who is attacking everyone. You know, that's that type of behavior. But definitely, we don't see in Trump much of the postmodern sensitivity that Obama exhibited a lot. Like Obama with Obamacare and the care for the refugees and all that. That was the beautiful American opening for postmodern, finally, from the president seat. And now it's kind of two steps back. So it's not only, you know, a Central European government in regression, but even the United States is in regression in that regard. And postmodernism has more refinement, as I said. There is also the integral wave on the front of postmodernism that looks for a deeper structure of the universe in the manness. Because simple postmodernism, this open-hearted, beautiful, loving community, doesn't like two things, and this is the shadow of it. Doesn't like leadership, and doesn't like structure. So they don't like if someone stands up that I will lead. Why would you lead? We are all equal. You shouldn't be more than others, because then you are not spiritual, but egoistic. So basically in postmodernism, strong leadership is seen as a regression or a traditional or a tribal era. We don't want that anymore. They don't see yet that there is a deeper underlying structure in the universe. And if somebody is in touch with that structure, with the, as you call the field, if somebody is channeling the field or is in contact with the field, then that person can actually lead, you know, so if you go deeper into our psyche, that then it's not only about love and equality, but it's also about, you know, deeper universal structure, universal structures of reality. There's actually an intelligent field that connects us and wants to express itself through us. So that's how spirituality comes in to the already postmodern sensitive connected, you know, vibes beyond this human connectedness and love and enjoyment. A deeper reality spirituality comes in with the field, and that's also one focus of my work, working with the field.
Mm-hmm. And Bence, can you maybe also describe a bit how leadership would look like if someone really embodies that and is grown into that?
Yes. So first of all, the leader needs to have a spiritual practice, a meditation. And when I say that, the point is relaxing the mind, letting go of thoughts and emotions, and emptying yourself so that the deeper and more refined presence and sensitivity opens up. So when I say meditation, I'm not referring to follow some religion. You know, you don't have to believe in previous lives, etc. I personally believe, but a person doesn't have to. You know, the point is not that, you know, the point is to work with the mind, the psyche, and you have to learn how to get your mind quiet. And if it takes a lot of time, then do a lot of time of practice, but it's worth everything. Because as the mind quiets, you know, thus the heart space opens, and the heart is the sensing organ of the field. The heart is not just a personal emotional center, like, oh, I love you because my heart is open, heart open, I love you. That's true. You know, love enhances. Guards go down. But also, somehow the heart space is the eye, you know, looking, is the eye, the spiritual sensing center of what wants to happen. And with that sensitivity, the leader can sense what wants to happen in a particular, you know, company, structure, society, group, what wants to happen instead of what I think should happen or what the strategy looks good to happen. So in modern rational thinking, we think through the mind, not through the heart. We think through things, we make rational decisions and make strategies and try to follow the strategy no matter what. You know, in postmodernity, we let that go. We are more like connected from the heart with love and try to make everyone comfortable and happy. The leader in postmodernity would maybe let go of part of the salary and give more to others. But more important that the collective is balanced, equal, and feels good. In post-postmodernity, in the integral, you know, the leader meditates into the field, what wants to happen, and sometimes makes decisions that are not in the strategy book, that doesn't make everyone happy necessarily and balanced. But if that step is made, then the whole structure will be, you know, at a better place where it wants to be. So it's a little bit of a shamanic leadership.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of a shamanic leadership, though the word shaman contains various factors. Like one factor can be channeling what the ancestors are saying, you know, or curing people. A leader doesn't necessarily have to have that, you know. Let the shamans have that. But that shamanic capacity to actually quiet the mind and intuitively, psychically sense what the field wants, I think that capacity can be incorporated into a normal everyday person and leader as well, with some training and some psycho-spiritual practice, you know, for leaders. Mm-hmm. You see what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. And Benza, I just wonder, because when I imagine a person like that, having this inner capacity, having this capacity of really tuning into the field, receiving a guidance and being connected to a source, let's say, of more wisdom, of a higher, deeper intelligence. And this person is, let's say, in a green environment, in a green society where people want to be equal, they don't want to have leaders at all. How does it play out that this person yet still emerges into a leadership position?
It's difficult. So if the environment is very green, like they don't want the person to lead, then the person probably will not be able to. You know, so it's not always possible. You need to have an environment when they are curious what you bring in or they trust you. So in other words, that kind of leader needs to find its own, you know, circle or place, or get out from if the circle is too green, too postmodern, too equal, but we don't allow anyone to lead, then you get out. And that's so typical today. You know, that's, I think, you know, I just got an email the other day that the community leader says that he discovered Integral and all, he discovered they are green, and they want to hire actually a leader who can lead them out from greenness. Mm-hmm. More integral.
This is why I ask this question, because when I open my eyes, I see that so much happening, and really, as you described, basically people then move out of their context into another context where this abilities are welcome.
Yes, exactly. So, and I saw cases when it was successful, and I saw other communities where they just couldn't pass that threshold for maybe years. But if you or someone is a person with that inner, you know, call, with that inner capacity, awakeness, then start doing it. And if you cannot do it in the place where you are, then find your place where you can do it, because it's a deeper calling. It's actually that the field starts to using us, you know. It's not some ego trip. But it's also the field, the higher consciousness wants us to do something, not just we want to do something. See, so I'm that kind of person.
Yeah, and in fact, often what I also observe in myself, and also when I witness others, is that often you are really pushed out of your comfort zone. You are really so pushed to the edge where life brings so much pressure that you need to expand capacities and gain some other skills as well.
Yes, and so far I was focusing on the leader's capacities, but also a leader of this kind have to listen to the team. So the relationship between the leader and the team becomes more symmetric. I think not fully equal as green would imagine. Before, green in modernity or primitive was asymmetric and very basically unfair. You know, the rich is very rich. You know, I don't care. I play the game well, so I deserve to be rich. You can die in the street in Hungary if you are not so skilled. Now, that's the shadow of the modernity. In the pre-modern authoritarian, it's fixed. I am God. You are the little one. It's forever. In the caste system in India. No wonder why postmodern green wants to get rid of all of that and wants to finally enjoy unity. But then in postmodern, in the integral, you allow a little bit of leadership. You don't have to be fully equal, but you don't want to, you know, the difference shouldn't be too big, because it starts to be painful for the leader. The leader doesn't want to see the leader. The rule is, we call it in integral, transcend and include, that a new stage transcends but also includes the previous stage. This means that the post-green, the post-postmodern, includes the love and compassion and care of the postmodern stage, but also has new capacities. So there you might leap, but you will not go too much away, you know, in power, status, payment, etc., because that would be painful for you as the leader. You know, your heart stays open.
So that then in this process also play in that when you are leading from this position, you really care and want to support others also to come into their full blossoming and in their full realization as far as it's possible.
Exactly, exactly. And you negotiate each, the way I do, for example, that if I have somebody in the team, a new person, I negotiate a payment for her or his needs. So it's not that there is one position with a fixed payment that would be a, you know, traditional, or it's not a simple meritocracy that this is the fix, and if you do that much profit, you get that percent. That's the modern orange. It's more like, what do you need? Who you are? Where are we? And if you want that much, and if I can pay that much, you get that much. If that person wants that much, and I can pay that much. So there is inequality in the system, but the inequality is built on the actual inner needs of people, not an imposed inequality to exploit people.
Yes, and what I also get when I listen to you, Benz, is that it's also acknowledging the uniqueness of everyone.
Exactly, exactly. So that's the green, that everybody is unique. We take that with us. We acknowledge that. You know, we want people to be themselves. We want people. We don't want people to be our, you know, blunt servants, so that we get the maximum gain, the modern approach. But we want to be themselves. Otherwise, we would feel uncomfortable together in the room. And if you find those themselves who fit to your mission, you know, and want to sign up and feel that there is a common mission to fulfill here, then you negotiate their needs, and basically that's your team, and then you listen to them.
Then yeah, this is also what I want to kind of bring in. Then you also, because of this capacity that you are receptive to not just yourself, but also to other people and the field, you are also very sensitive to receive if something isn't working or is out of order or someone is upset. You maybe know it before the person would be conscious about it.
Exactly. So, yes, you are sensitive and attentive to them. And the other way around, we function more like a team where everybody is a sensing organ. And this is what is emphasized in Frederic Laloux's book, Reinventing Organization, who calls this very, very same stage, the teal stage of development, the teal integral stage, that it's not a top-down hierarchy anymore, but it's more like a team where everybody is a cell of the same body and sensing. And the people can make decisions on the periphery as well, and then report in the center. But they don't. You don't have to wait that to make a decision in the periphery. First, you have to go and ask the one person higher and the one person higher and the big boss, and this chain up and down. No, that's the traditional system or the modern system. But in the postmodern, you redefine who we are as a collective. We are all an intelligent living being as the group, as the company or as the team. And there is much more empowerment among the workers, among the team members, of much more empowerment and decision-making power. But still, the founder, I think, has to have, an accentuated voice in it, because and this is a little bit how I personally differ from the usual Thiel descriptions, that the usual Thiel description in Lalu's books doesn't think of the founder as a half shaman, you know, just kind of a person with the function, and everybody has, you know, functions and sensitivity. But I think there are visionaries, you know, in the integral stage of consciousness. There are people actually with visions that come from the field, and that has a very strong force. It's not just an idea that let's produce shoes and how to do it, you know, financially viable, but you know, creating something new for the world that you somehow in a vision, in meditation, came to you. So yes, there is some difference between you and between those who didn't have the vision but have the resonance and sensitivity with their vision. That's why they want to work with you, because when they want to work with you, they actually not necessarily want to work with you as an ego, but as one who is representing the mission. They sign up for the mission, the purpose, purpose-driven companies, right?
Yeah, and what I also would like to add to that sometimes a vision can be not so much seeing really accurately something in the future, but maybe really feeling called to next steps, and then in coming together in a team, and this, let's say, this more we-oriented intelligence maybe can support the emerging and the unraveling of the larger perspective of this vision, kind of where you then kind of work that out together,
and you need each other to work that out, because even a leader with a vision has just limited capacities, you know, and needs the others with other capacities. So it's really like a picture made of many puzzles, you know. And yes, and the other thing of this leadership style is described by spiral dynamics that cause this level yellow. So the same integral stage is called yellow by spiral dynamics and Thiel from Lalu's perspective. And that yellow aspect talks about functionality, that this kind of leader thinks very functionally. So there is very little ego trip. It's not about pride and status and personal gains. It's more about knowing what needs to happen out of the vision, purpose, and also out of the actual situations that arouse. There is this sensitivity of what would be the balance for the field here. You know, right here in this moment when I walk into the room, whoa, this is a situation. What is the balance for it all? You know? And functionally, what is that, you know, action, what is that move that you need to do or arrange? So I have been working with yellow people, you know, from this perspective, and it's just so relieving to work with them, because there is no ego trip, there is no fight, but still simply they very simply, quickly, functionally do what needs to be done, and everybody is in balance.
Yeah, and in a way, from a green perspective, they often are called cold, not so emotional, and
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. This stage is more individualistic, is a typical residing place for the facilitator, you know, the coach that likes that kind of facilitator and coach that likes to, you know, touch the acupuncture point, you know, do a little and then things crystallize. And while that's green is more collective, emotional, together, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And Benze, would you say a bit also or speak about how we can support people, let's say, in our surrounding when we are more in a private family context, or in companies when we are more in a professional team relationship? How would it look like if let's say from a leader perspective of one stage, you would like to support the whole group to come to the next level? How could that look like?
Well, I think in the family it's difficult to do, if not impossible, because usually in the family there are already established roles that you bring from before, right? So for your mom, for your father, for your auntie, you already have kind of like an asana in the relationship that's brought from many years back. It's difficult to change. So maybe it's a good idea not to try to change the whole family to get to a higher stage, but rather enjoy what you have there. And, but it's more like maybe you find someone in the family who is open to you, and then you can go with that person. I experienced that in my own family, that one of my cousins is very open to this consciousness, very open to me personally, so we could work with her both ways, and she really opened, and there's a beautiful higher stage relationship evolving between us. Why same family, other members don't even get what I'm doing, you know, and just complete closeness or not even interest to learn what I'm doing. I'm more traditional. So, but I'm happy that I at least have a family, you know, and beautiful dinners, and we can talk about what we can talk about, and that's the zone where we meet. So definitely I wouldn't suggest from a realistic perspective to change the whole family. Rather to find the one who is your mate in the higher stages. Now in a company, the leader is the key. So if you can change the leader, or if the leader has an openness to start to play according to the new game, or at least try it, then there is a chance that the whole team will shift. If the leader is unmovable, I'm not interested, then just trying to, I think, acupuncture the team members and bit by bit trying to change them so that everybody changes, I'm not sure that would happen. And so the leader has a great responsibility in this. And at some cases, like Zappos did, that is a famous example in the integral stage developmental work, or companies, that the leader decided to implement an integral stage company structure and functioning, which is called holocracy. Holocracy is another famous, operational system from the integral stage for companies. And they graciously offered to every worker that, hey, here are the rules, this is how we are going to play, and this is why. So they could read it. Then they could decide to stay or leave the company. So it was not imposed upon them forcefully. You can be part or leave. And if people were leaving, they were given, 3 months of salary. So it was generously, compensated if they decided to go. They weren't simply kicked out. So there was this kind of green sensitivity and intelligence, for everyone. But there was also a visionary decision of the leader, to bring in the company and the collective into a higher stage, which involves sometimes saying goodbye to people and saying hello to new people, which probably Green wouldn't do. But he belongs here, you cannot send him away, etc. So there's the difference between postmodern and post-postmodern.
Beautiful. Benza, do you feel there is anything to add to this issue of this new way of leadership before I invite you to talk about the Integral European Conference?
Oh, thank you for inviting me to talk. Maybe I suggest some readings for our friends who are viewing the program. A really popular new book is Frederic Laloux's Reinventing Organizations. So just type in Reinventing Organizations, and if you see a turquoise butterfly, that's the kind of the picture on the book, then you are in the right place. So follow the butterfly. And you might also check out Holocracy 1, is the name of the company, and in their website you can download the Holacracy Constitution, which is basically kind of a workbook of how to run a company in this new way. And you might also check out Spiral Dynamics by Don Beck. And of course, the central classical works here at Integral is Ken Wilber's books. There is 30 plus, so you can pick any. But the latest excitement is the future of religion, you know, that summarizes all of Wilber's Integral Wisdom into a 700-page book. So that's the big new book of Wilber. With that, you get everything that's integral. If you want a shorter version, read my personal favorite, The Brief History of Everything by Ken Wilber. So these are the suggested readings.
Thank you. Yeah, and then, I mean, next year is the next Integral European Conference, and I really want to be there this time. So maybe you can share a bit what is special, what is different in an Integral conference than in a usual conference, and you now have experience because I guess it's the third time then. Let's just take us a bit with you into this amazing experiential field.
Yes, thank you so much for asking. And I'm sitting right now in the office of organizing that. So I want to show you actually here. Do you see the webpage? So people see they can have a felt sense of the Integral European Conference, or IEC. As you say, is the manias, actually not the third, but the fourth Integral European Conference. This is kind of the atmosphere, the vibes. You can see a couple of pictures. So from the 22nd of May to the 3rd of June, for 6 days we gather from 50 countries, 700 people, 200 presentations, 12 keynotes. So it's a huge, huge social gathering. This is basically the main social gathering of the Integral world globally. So if you want to meet all the players or most of the players from all around the globe, then that's where you come, the Integral European Conference. It takes place in Hungary at Lake Balaton. So it's usually like a 90-minute flight from Munich or Germany. And we basically try to create, and I hope we are successful, we already have three, a real Integral conference in the sense that we balance out understanding science knowledge, the left hemisphere, and we balance the right hemisphere, experience, play, therapy, transformation, you know, dance, music, nonverbal processes that people do in workshops and retreats. So normally a conference is more like talk, you know, the modern conference. Too much for the head and you can't take it anymore. Or you go to a workshop and retreat and you have a lot of experiential, but not so much time left for specific, you know, understanding and discourse. Now here, you want to balance the two hemispheres. So two brain hemispheres integrated. And also we want to integrate the modern talk and the postmodern experience. That's how we get the postmodern, where all these value systems are together. And always there are some traditional spiritual teachers also invited. So we also weave in the traditional wisdom. The good side of traditionalism is the timeless wisdom traditions, spiritual messages. So basically it's a wide and playful playground where not only you get a lot of, you know, up-to-date information and experience, but just by participating you exercise your higher stage self functioning. See, so actually it's a role modeling, or not even role modeling, but practicing being the Integral stage of awareness. And a lot of details are worked out accordingly to this conference.
And I guess also, I mean, without having been there yet, but when I tune into the field, I really also sense that it's also a beautiful opportunity to build friendships with people which care about similar things.
Yes, it's a beautiful opportunity. It's a huge socializer. So actually, instead of adding more, we are thinking of getting out some program elements, because one of the most enjoyable parts is just roam around in this jungle of interesting people, you know, and this is where the bees, globally, the intelligent integral bees comes together, and it's like bzzz, like a bee hub. You hardly have time to sleep. You promise I go to sleep and we'll meditate, and then you go to sleep at 2 and wake up at 7 and continue the socializing in the breakfast. So it's beautiful, it's intense, it's joyous, it's very intelligent. There's a famous transpersonal psychologist, Roger Walsh, who usually comes to the IECs, and he was also the personal mentor of Ken Wilber in his early years. And Roger says, quote, "There is just impossible to have a boring conversation here," quote.
That's great. And even though it's in Europe, I guess it's really global. This is also the theme of this year, the conference. So because I expect also many people watching the summit from Australia, New Zealand, the States. So really everyone is welcome to join.
Yes, 40% is non-Europeans, 60% is Europeans, so almost half-half, you know, a little more Europeans naturally because it's in Europe, but a lot of non-Europeans come, and that's our goal. The very title of the conference is Global Integral Awakens. That's the title of the next IEC, Global Integral Awakens, because out of three reasons, but one, the most important, that we sense that the integral consciousness now is globally present. It's not just America and Europe, the usual suspects, but it's present. We just had the first Integral African Conference in South Africa in June. Also in June, there was the first Latin American Integral Conference. And when an Integral Conference happens in a continent, not a country conference, but a continental scale conference, that means that in that continent, this stage of consciousness had been already practiced for many years before, typically in countries. And then these countries start to look for each other, start to organize, and that's how a continental scale conference comes about. So it shows that there is already an integral consciousness and people dealing with this stuff, you know, in the whole Latin America, in Africa, and of course in Northern America as well, because mostly it comes from there. And in Europe, since the 90s, we have this. So in 2014, we created the first European-level integral conference that then became the main conference for the global community due its size, you know. And then it attracts more and more from all over, Australians too. And this is the time when it tilted from a European conference with global guests to a global conference on the European ground. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when I sense into that, and I sense into this topic of conscious evolution, what I always get is that we started to let's say, if you would put the analogy of a body, we would have been cells being attracted to build different organs. Yes. Now kind of organs are kind of built or are in the final process of building. And what I sense is that we are now coming also to the stage where we start to get a sense of the larger body, where all these organs worked together in service of this larger global body.
Exactly. Exactly. And of course, in a conference like this, a lot of birthing happens and creativity happens. So it's not just people giving lectures and running workshops, and that's it. But that's one side, you know, you can enjoy that too. But also the creative unfolding comes from this higher meeting together. A co-creation happens on these conferences. A lot of new things are giving birth there. You know, corporations, groups are formed. You know, new ideas are birthed. New alliances are made. So for all of us, in every 2 years, when it happens, it's every 2 years, it's like a plateau of the 2 years period. And also, last aspect that I'd like to bring in before we probably wrap up is that I think the identity of a human being is made up of relationships. So who you feel you are in the personal realm, it depends on who are your people, what's your network, you know. And if you only meet your country people, then even if you think you are global, you are more local. If you put yourself in an environment when there is a global community, then you immediately start to feel global, not just think global. Your identity shifts. So if you want your identity to authentically be global, then you need to go to you know, a big forest with global trees. So, and that's a message for many integral people who are already plugged into some integral circles in their town or in their country. If you want to widen your identity, then you need to, you know, come to the gathering when there is 600 or 700 folks from all around the globe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the factor that stays with you after the conference. There's the hidden factor, you know, between all the visible factors. That's mm-hmm. very important.
Right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I really love the similarity, because also with this Conscious Evolution Summit, it was so clear that it's a global event, that it's attracting people really from all over the globe, and same as with the Integral Conference. And yes, so maybe, Bente, I want to give you the voice to wrap up what you would say you would really like that people take out of this time together from you.
Okay. Well, I would say study integral theory, understand the stages of development and the higher stage. I think it's very important and a turning point in our life. And on the other side, I say that do meditate a lot, and it doesn't matter if it's difficult at the beginning. Sit until you experience a fully collected state beyond your scattered mind, because that's where a new chapter will start. And then be a channel of what wants to happen, and be a skilled manifester of the new world.
Mm-hmm.
Come to a conference, so let's meet in person.
Mm-hmm.
May.
And what I maybe also want to add, really encourage people to honestly sense in themselves whether they feel in the right context, or whether it's maybe time to shift something, to move on, because sometimes this is really necessary.
Yes, it's very necessary in these times, yes.
Thank you so much, Bente. Again, enjoyed our time together. And as I said, I really have this intention being part of the conference in 2020. And I also want to thank you I can't imagine how much it takes to set up a conference like that, because, I mean, my summit is a tiny little piece in comparison to what you generate with a huge team. So I thank you for meeting all the challenges and building up all the capacities which are needed.
Yes, there are some. So thank you for your appreciation, and thank you for your show that you put out here and connecting us many people together. So I'm glad to be in the program, and I wish you great success.
Mm. Okay. And also thank you to everyone who was listening now to the video, watching the video, listening the audio. I really want to thank you that you took your time to be with us, to be open, to be inspired. Maybe we will meet each other in the next European Integral Conference in Hungary. And I thank you so much. See you next time.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.